Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Joining us now, a little bit earlier than he normally does, is Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast and Sportsnet. Elliot, appreciate you being flexible with your schedule today. I know Willie wanted to chat with you before he had to head to Dallas. Of course, the Predators taking on the Dallas Stars tomorrow night. But I want to start with the Nashville Predators here. I know after the Preds fell to the Ducks 5-3 earlier this week, I heard all of the outrage on social media of, you know, you see Soros isn't playing well anymore. You need to make a change. I heard a lot of Predators fans calling for, activation from Milwaukee, maybe a change up in the roster. Have you heard anything about potential changes? And maybe what would your message be to Predators fans that went borderline nuclear after that loss to Anaheim?
That doesn't sound borderline nuclear. That sounds like a full mushroom cloud out there, Carolyn.
You should hear the nuclear from some of these fans around these parts.
Yeah, I would say be careful what you wish for. Because the moment let's just say for argument's sake, you were to trade a UC Saros, the moment that happened, you know who you'd be screaming for? You'd be screaming for UC Saros. So, I don't think he's going anywhere. Barry Trotz is on record as saying he'd like to keep him, and I don't have any reason to believe that Barry Trotz is lying or fibbing when he's telling that. I do think you want to keep him. Obviously, maybe he's not at the level of that you guys have expected or hoped for lately, but I think that's more just of, you know, the high standard he set, and I think he's going to be fine. Like, Saros to me is the last guy I'd be worried about. I think, honestly, when it comes to what you guys are thinking, I think one of the biggest questions you guys have is, what's your defense going to be going forward? You've got some contract situations you've got to deal with. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but I've heard Carrier has played pretty well. So I think that he is kind of solidifying his spot, I think, in the future of the Predators there. But between him and Fabro, and I know you guys really like Spencer Stastny a lot, I just think that one of the key things that you guys are figuring out here is what your defense is going to look like long term, because you have some contract situations to figure out here.
Elliot Friedman is with us, 32 Thoughts podcast in Sportsnet. Looking a little bit more nationally, you see the news coming out that Corey Perry will be able to rejoin another NHL team. So what kind of went on behind the scenes there with Corey Perry, and of course the NHL Players Association kind of pushing this along so he's eligible to sign with another team?
The one thing I would say is, and I kind of corrected it when I wrote it the second time, I shouldn't have used the word eligible. He wasn't ineligible. Like, he wasn't technically in a position where he couldn't be signed. But I think everybody kind of realized that you weren't going to sign him if the league was going to stand in the way, right? And I think that is a key thing to recognize here. He was eligible to be signed, but no team was going to do it if you were worried that the league wasn't going to wasn't going to be happy about it. So, you know, Perry asked for a meeting with the league. He spoke to them. I think he kind of explained everything from his point of view, including some of the help. He said that when his contract was terminated, he was going to get help for some alcohol use. I think he told them about what he did there. And I understand that he left with the blessing, and that the league wasn't going to stand in his way, and that, you know, he could go ahead and sign with someone. And I do think there is interest, Carolyn. We don't have a clear picture of exactly yet what happened here with him in Chicago. You know, and I don't want to minimize anything because I don't know the full details. But the one thing that's clear here is that once a contract gets terminated, the Players Association has 60 days to decide if they're going to grieve that. And there is definitely a feeling here. And again, it's I don't have all the details, so I'm just relaying what I've heard secondhand. There's definitely a feeling here that if it wasn't Chicago, because of everything they went through with the Kyle Beach situation, that they don't believe that the contract would have been terminated. So they have until January 29th to decide if they're going to appeal this. And the belief is they will, although there's just nothing formal yet at this point in time. So I think what the general feeling is here is that this is something, while obviously something that shouldn't have happened, it's not something that would have resulted in the termination in just about any other situation, but an organization that knows it's been through something. And, you know, one of the things that Kyle Davidson, the GM, did when he met with the players about it was tell them that we cannot afford any scandal, no matter how slight it is. So I think this was a case where a team was just being very careful, and whatever happened shouldn't have happened. But it doesn't sound like anything that anyone feels should prevent Corey Perry from playing in the NHL.
Now, Elliot, let's get back to the Soros thing. Yep. I'm with you. I think Soros will eventually sort of work its way out of this and hopefully start playing a lot better. He gets back to being the old Soros. But if he continues to struggle moving forward, do you see a scenario where they bring the young guy, Askarov, up and start to let him get some minutes? I know Lankinen is there, but Lankinen, what, has another year on this contract, or this may be the last year.
He's a free agent at the end of the season.
So just letting a young guy come in and sort of get some time in the NHL.
Well, I mean, the one thing is that, like, he obviously started to, Derek, and you can see the potential. I see why this guy was drafted as high as he was. He's a really talented young goalie. You know, the only thing is, unless you want to carry three goalies, which is not what anybody likes to do, there's a couple teams doing it this year, and it's far from ideal. You know, either someone has to be hurt or someone has to be put on waivers to bring Askarov up. And, you know, you're obviously not putting Soros on waivers. I don't think you'd put Lankinen on waivers either, because you'd lose a guy like him. He's played very well. So I think for this year, it just unless Nashville suddenly decides for whatever reason they want to carry three goalies, I think they just stay with the two. If someone gets hurt, Askarov gets his chance. He plays as much as he can in Milwaukee, but I think we all see where this is going. It's likely after this year that Askarov is going to be up. Whatever you guys do in goal, and I assume it's going to be signed Soros, that Askarov is going to be up next year, and he's a big part of your future.
And Lankinen just got a big win for them at Dallas last Saturday, and we'll see who goes tomorrow in Dallas. I would think Lankinen might get a shot.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well. Very well.
Elliot, the TNT guys got in on this discussion, and we've been doing it in this market too. If you look at the surge of the Oilers, and they've only played 37 games, the Predators are right at the halfway point of their season. But the Oilers are playing just lights out right now, so it's hard to envision them not making the playoffs. And so the discussion is, look, is it too early to say halfway through that there's almost seven spots in the Western Conference playoff race spoken for?
Well, are you trying to ruin the drama here, Willie?
No, I'm just pointing out that the Predators are in a great spot, right?
Anyway?
The Predators are right in this thing, but there's a lot of teams that are really looking for one. They're only playing for really one spot when you get down to it.
I would agree with that. As long as Edmonton doesn't, you know, fall off the face of the earth like they did earlier in the season, I agree with you. They should be perfectly fine. And I would say that. Like, there's a race. Like, some teams have certainly fought their way into it. Like, there's no question that the Predators have had greater staying power this year than a lot of us expected, especially in that week early in the season where, you know, things were really falling apart and looked kind of dire.
They were 5-10.
Yeah, they were 31st in the league. I think we were all sitting there saying, okay, that's it. We don't have to worry about Nashville anymore. But I would think that's fair. Like, the other thing, too, is Edmonton's got those games in hand, right? They're at 37 games. So you look at it and you say the math is really really good for them. So, yeah, I think that's fair. But I think you guys are very much in this. And whatever people were expecting from the Predators at the beginning of the season, I think they sent a message that they've got staying power, and you better take them seriously because they're part of it.
So then you look at that next group of teams, the Predators, the Kraken, who are back in it. They're playing really well. Arizona, the Blues, the Flames, and then the Wild, who we've been watching closely because they've just played two games in Dallas. They're injury-riddled right now, and they lost both. So let's start with the Wild, with where they are right now and their outlook with their lack of health and cap issues. So where do you think their mindset is right now?
Well, I think they're a team that always tries to compete for the playoffs. You know, they got their fired coach bounce, and now they, you know, like I didn't really realize it until Michael Russo tweeted it last night, but they're 20 points behind the Jets. And the other thing is that the Wild's math is not as good as anyone else's there. Like, they're down, they've got, 38 points, and they've played a lot of games. Now, I think they're kind of not the team that will just give up. They've got some young players. I think they'll keep building. Like, I don't know if I see them trading any of their core players. But maybe some of the players on the fringes, some guys who they look at and say maybe their contracts are up or they're not as serious about the future. But they just bet on their core, and they just signed a whole bunch of guys. So I don't know if I expect them to pivot that quickly, Willie. But, you know, this has been a tough year for them on and off the ice. And I do recognize that sometimes you make decisions after seasons like this one, but I expect them to, like, the one thing about Guerin is he's really impulsive. It's kind of the way he runs the team. But when you have seasons like this one, sometimes the best thing to do is take a deep breath and just let it play out before you do anything rash.
So the same is true. And I see a lot of articles up in, you know, on Sportsnet and things like that, where you were in your circles about the Flames, who they come in here a week ago and get a big win against the Predators. Then they turn around and lose a couple, including one in Chicago against a decimated Blackhawks team. They turn back and win. So they're right in the middle. And they're 4 points behind the Predators, same amount of games. Where's their head at, knowing that they've got a lot of contract decisions to make?
Well, I think they're willing to move players. Lindholm, I think, will move. Tanev, I think, will move. You know, the one I think they've thought about keeping is Hanifin. But that one is weird. That one goes in and out. Like, Hanifin had a verbal deal earlier in the year, and then they lost a couple of games, and he kind of changed his mind. And so I always wonder about that. And now I've heard they've started talking again. Like, Hanifin is, like, he's a younger guy. He's about to turn 27. So I can see a reason for keeping him, but I wonder if you keep him, are you only punting this down the road for a couple of years? The one thing I think is that the Flames just haven't had the traction on some of their guys that they kind of hoped to. So that's, you know, but their guys are definitely available. Like, Lindholm, the center, everybody kind of wonders about Colorado with them. And whether or not that's going to be the player that Colorado goes after. But that's a move that might have to be closer to the trade deadline because Colorado's got no cap room. So I don't think the Flames have changed. I think the only thing that maybe is different is maybe they're thinking about keeping Hanifin again. But other than that, I think they're looking to move guys.
So that kind of brings you down to a group of four or five teams for one or two slots, depending on whether you think the Oilers are a shoe-in or not. So that it's just an interesting outlook.
Put it this way, I'd be surprised. Like, I'd be really surprised.
I'm penciling them in. If not, I'm not putting a Sharpie or a pen, but I got them in pencil as one of the spots.
They have erasable ink now, Willie. You can use that. The other thing, too, about you guys is, like, I still think you guys are going to look at the bigger picture. Like, it's not going to be about this year for you. It's going to be about what's the thing that makes sense in the long run. And I still wonder about you and Vancouver as trade partners, whether it's a Garland or a Kuzmenko or something like that. You know, those players have some term. They play the way that, you guys, they can help you guys a bit. I don't know how, I don't think you guys are climbing over walls to go get these players, but I think you've had conversations with them. But again, I think you guys have a luxury of, you don't need to rush into anything. I think you feel that you have cap room. It's the most valuable thing you can have in the NHL, especially now as cap room. Like, you guys are going to have some choices here, and I think the one thing about Barry Trotz is he's patient, right? He's very patient, and he sees a big picture. And I think anything that the Predators do is not going to be about 2024. It's going to be about where you're going beyond 2024.
All right, so we've got to get your take on the soap opera between Cutter Gauthier and the Flyers. I just have this vision, yeah. And all of us, you know, we have this perception of different markets, right? And you know it just like anybody else. But Philadelphia fans have a reputation. I'm thinking of JD Drew, right? All the throwing batteries at a guy who didn't want to sign in the Philadelphia market. Scott Boras, yeah. The ultimate villain agent. That guy was toast before it ever started every time he went to Philly. But now you got a guy 19 years old, basically, I guess to use the term, ghosted, right? He just ghosted the Flyers, said, I'm not returning your calls, I'm not playing for you. What happened there?
So last year, Chuck Fletcher was the GM of the Flyers, and he was fired on March 10th. And on March 11th, Cutter Gauthier's season ended at Boston College. They played their last game. They lost in their conference quarterfinals, I think it was, and his season ended. And I believe that Cutter Gauthier thought he was going to join the Flyers. I do. And it didn't happen. And I think it happened for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you'll remember, last year was a really hard end of the year in Philly. They didn't have a lot of cohesion. The dressing room were at each other's throats. There was the Pride Night fiasco there. Not everybody in the dressing room hated each other, but there were clearly some issues. And I just don't know if Philly wanted to bring him into that. And, you know, so I just think that the player, I think, was hoping to join the team. And they kind of indicated to him, and also, too, they had 16 games left, and if he had played 10 of them, he would have what's called burned or used up the first year of his contract. So he would have been 1 year closer to getting his second contract. And I think the player thought that he was going to be up there, but, you know, the Flyers weren't as sure about it. You know, Keith Jones wasn't hired until May 11th. Daniel Briere didn't come the full-time GM until May 11th. It was just such a period of chaos in the organization. And I don't think they felt they were insulting the kid at all. I think they were just like, you know what, like, if you want, I think they broached, you want to start in the American Hockey League, play the end of the year there, and then you'll join us next year. And I don't think the Flyers meant to insult him. I think it was, they thought they were doing the right thing, but I think it just got taken a different way. And, you know, I compared it to Cool Hand Luke a bit. What we've got here is a failure to communicate. And I think the communication broke down, and I think the Flyers always felt they could fix it. They really liked Gauthier. I think they really felt they could fix it. And I think in the kids' eyes, it just wasn't fixable. And you know what? Like, you're entitled to not play for the team that drafts you. You have to sit out a while or you can force a trade. Like, it's not impossible. The one thing I just disagreed with is I think he should have just told them exactly what it was. That's all.
Elliot, true or false, Peter Laviolette, the next head coach for the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Or the Patriots. He grew up in Boston, right?
He's got that kind of same look as Saban. Like,
yeah.
When his eyes bear in on you, you do not want to be on the receiving end of that. I think it would be hilarious if Belichick was the next head coach. In Alabama.
Yeah.
Just a little swap, saving to New England. Elliot, appreciate you for joining us. Appreciate your time and appreciate you for being flexible with us today. Elliot Friedman, 32
no
Thoughts, Sportsnet Podcast. Appreciate you, Elliot. We'll chat next week.
Take care, guys.
All right, appreciate it. Willie D, you are en route to Dallas. Big one for the Predators against the Stars tomorrow night.
Tough one, tough place to win. Big win for the Predators there on Saturday. Let's see if they can replicate it, or a little rematch action. But they'll have the Stars' attention, that's for sure.
Absolutely, they will. Willie D, appreciate your safe travels to Dallas. Coming up next, we'll continue to break down some of the bullet points in Joe and Diana's article, our reaction to it, and, you know, just providing a little bit more insight as to what exactly happened behind the scenes. How did we get here with Mike Vrabel and the Titans organization? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tonight for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders are at home facing Louisiana Tech with pregame beginning at 7:30 p.m. and tip-off at 8 p.m. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays will be joined by Mitch Light of The Athletic in 30 minutes. Willie D. is en route to Dallas. Predators taking on the Dallas Stars tomorrow night on the road. But right now, I want to take a deep dive into Joe Rexroad and Diana Russini's report in The Athletic. Maybe shedding a little bit of light of exactly what went on behind the scenes between the Tennessee Titans and Mike Vrabel. In this article, it's kind of more of a timeline more than anything. Bullet points of, okay, this is what happened at this point that rubbed the owner the wrong way. This is what happened fast forward 2 months. This is what happened to kind of fracture the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Amy Adams Strunk a little bit more. So, D-Mace, if it's cool with you, we'll just go bullet point by bullet point. Let's go through this timeline. So, rewind to when John Robinson was let go, when John Robinson was fired with the Tennessee Titans. Let's kick it off with the first bullet point highlighted here by Joe Rexroad and Diana Russini. First and foremost, they talk about evolving the team, modernizing the team, adding in more analytics. Go back a couple of years ago when John Robinson was at the helm, and there was a viral graphic that went out, and it was a breakdown of every single NFL team's analytics department. The Titans didn't have one. So bringing in Rand Carthon, he brought in that element and belief in analytics. That's what Chad Brinker is as assistant general manager, as kind of the head of the analytics department. Mm-hmm. One little tidbit in here talks about how Mike Vrabel was on board for bringing in analytics, but there was a disconnect between the coaching staff and analytics. Well, analytics was used a lot in terms of player scouting and the draft process. There was a disconnect there between the coaching staff and analytics with, going for two, going forward on fourth and three, whatever it might be. And how it even cites in this article about how when Mike Vrabel decided to go for two against Miami, the analytics department told them, hey, don't go for two, decided to go for two anyways. Obviously, it ended up being, a good decision because he won the football game. But kind of, I look at that there and say, well, the analytics department, the player development, the scouting, that seemed like that's all Rand Carthon's side of things. Yet there was a disconnect between analytics and the coaching staff. Well, that falls on Mike Vrabel for that kind of lack of communication.
Yeah, I'm sure the analytics, and there's a place for analytics, and I'm not going to sit here and say there's not. I think as the world starts to evolve, as sports starts to evolve, analytics, whether you like it or don't, analytics become a big part in what you're doing from a sports standpoint. Analytics become a big part of everything that we do, from finance to everything else. They've been using the analytics and finances forever. So now they're starting to use it more in football. But there's still also that element of the feel of the game. I'm sure when Vrabel wanted to go for two versus Miami, the analytics said no. Don't go for two yet. And it was probably relayed to him. But he felt the game. He had a feeling for the game and said, no, we're going to go for two. Now, you go for two and you make it and subsequently you win. I'm not necessarily upset that we won or that you went for two. You asked my opinion and I gave it to you based on the analytics. Analytics said, no, don't go for it. But then you go for it. You're the head coach. You go for it. We get it. We're good. I think maybe that little portion is being blown up a little bit too much, because there's always going, whether it's analytics or for, a feel of the game, there's always going to be this back and forth between the head coach and maybe the OC or the head coach in the DC. Should we go for it? Should we do this? I got a feel for the game. What does the what do you think? Well, the analytics says this is what we do. All right, I heard you. I feel you, but I just got a just a feeling within me. Let's go for it. You asked my opinion. I gave it to you. Now, you chose not to use it. We still scored. I'm good. Mm-hmm. It's not like any – listen, it could be that the analytics said don't go for it. You went for it. You won. They still mad at you. How can that be?
I
don't know if that can – I vision it as being what I just said.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you want? Hey, should we go for it? Well, the analytics said we shouldn't go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I heard you. I got a feel.
I'm still gonna
we got to do it. Uh-huh. We do it. It's your team. You score, everybody's happy. So I don't know if that's a big story or not. I mean, but obviously with all this other stuff coming out, it tends to become a bigger thing than maybe it really was.
And my philosophy on analytics, I think it's a tool, and I don't think that you should be
exactly
married to them, that I don't need analytics to tell me something that's not the truth. I don't need to compound all these numbers and multiply them by 1,000 mm-hmm. and then add a percentage sign, and that tells me that, you know, so-and-so is a better player than so-and-so. No, I can see things with my own eyes. I don't need to be married to the analytics. I think that the analytics thing and the miscommunication between the analytics department and the coaching department was a symptom of Amy Adams Strunk not feeling like Mike Vrabel fully embraced this maybe evolution of the football team or a new kind of feel of the football team. And that really was what my biggest takeaway from the article was, that kind of highlighting all of these points. The other thing that really stood out to me that we touched on earlier, Vrabel wanted Ryan Cowden to be the next general manager. And Vrabel was never told that it was going to be Ryan Cowden, but this little tidbit here that Ryan Cowden ran the entire 2023 draft board but was fired immediately after the draft.
Now, was there a report that came out that said, that implied that Vrabel thought Ryan Cowden was going to be the GM and then end up he was blindsided? And Ran end up being a GM.
I believe you're talking about the Tom Pelissero report.
Yeah, the Tom Pelissero
report. Last week.
Exactly.
I can pull it up and get exactly what Tom Pelissero said. But essentially, my takeaway from that was Mike Vrabel was told it was going to be Ryan Cowden.
Exactly. And I think that's what we were discussing last week. Like,
is that why Mike Vrabel didn't trust Amy?
Exactly. Is that why Mike Vrabel didn't trust Amy? Because you had, you know, conveyed to the head coach that this was going to be your guy, and then all of a sudden it's not your guy. But that's not what, you know, Joe and Diana has wrote in this article. He was never told that Ryan Cowden would be the guy. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, which one is it? Is it he was told or he wasn't told? Well, based upon reports last week, it seemed like he was told that Ryan Cowden was going to be the guy. But now, based upon this one, no, we never told you Ryan Cowden was going to be the guy.
Vrabel wanted him.
Exactly.
But
you wanted him.
Told that.
Absolutely.
And whenever they started the process with Rand Carthon, this was a really intriguing paragraph here to me. It says, when Rand Carthon was close to getting the job, Vrabel told Strunk he liked Carthon but didn't feel he was ready to become an NFL general manager. Vrabel's suggestion, the Titans hire Carthon as the assistant GM, a promotion from his position as number three in the 49ers pecking order. Strunk did not take kindly to this suggestion, and team sources believe her and Vrabel's relationship took a hit as a result of that conversation.
Well, I mean, there's a possibility. Again, okay, you gave your opinion as to, you know, how you felt about Rand Carthon. You felt that Ryan Cowden should have been the guy, that Ryan Cowden earned. But he went down this same exact path as Rand Carthon, you know? Scouting assistant, area assistant, national scout, senior college scout, assistant director. Then when he got to the Titans, director of player personnel, vice president of player personnel, interim general manager. So he basically went down the same path as Ram was going down. What made him more qualified is because he was your guy. He was on the staff last year with you. He's been in the building. That's the only thing I believe, if you're asking me, that made Ryan Cowden you know, more qualified because you knew him and you didn't know Rand Carthon. But they, it seemed like they sort of their career path, how you become a GM, it sort of went down the same road, you know. And plus, Rand has been with three successful organizations. Doesn't that mean something?
I think it does. And it could have been, rather than just the resumes and the qualifications, something that stood out to Mike Vrabel, perhaps in the interview process.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I find it very hard to believe if Vrabel said, like, let's just pretend I'm Mike Vrabel, you're Amy Adams, strike teammates. I say, hey, Amy, you know, I really like Rand, but I think that maybe he's not quite ready and maybe he's better fit as an assistant general manager. If it was proposed like that, I don't think that that would rub Amy Adams' trunk the wrong way. I don't think that she would start to question or whether or not Mike Vrabel was qualified to be the head coach or if he was fully invested into this collaboration, into whatever her vision might be. I don't know what it was. I don't know how the conversation went down. And I don't know. I don't know. But I find it very hard to believe that it was just a concern about Rand Carthon's qualifications that that started to fracture the relationship.
Yeah, maybe that.
It had to have been a pretty heated conversation.
Yeah, it's not what you say, it's how you say it to people.
Right.
So maybe,
bless me,
thank you. Maybe it's how he said or how he conveyed, you know, what he was saying to Amy that she didn't like, and then subsequently stuff started coming out of that building, and then you go up to New England, and all of that happens, and then more stories starts to come out, and more reports starts to come out, and she just got to a point where she was just tired of it, and she has every right as a team owner. Like, listen, if the message out of this building isn't synchronized, we have a problem, and it seemed like it wasn't.
No, it was, and that felt clear, and maybe the root of that, of why she was rubbed so wrong about that, well, that suggestion from Vrabel is another tidbit in this article that says that Mike Vrabel wanted full control over the roster and that he had earned it. Now, that is different than what we heard Jared came on our show on Tuesday and from his source said that Mike Vrabel didn't want final say. Mike Vrabel didn't want to be general manager. Mike Vrabel just wanted to coach football. Well, now it's coming out that Mike Vrabel wanted full control over the roster, which was it?
Yeah. Did you want full control? Did you not want full control? You felt you earned full control? Again, I go back to, did you truly earn full control? You earned the right to be the coach. Yes, you have. But did you earn the right to have full control? Let's remember, John was at the helm first, okay? He drafted these guys.
He's a pretty good general
manager. He drafted these guys that you leaned on so heavy. He drafted those guys, not you. And as those guys started to mature, your team started to get better. It started to get better under Mike Mularkey, and then subsequently you took the job. So in there, where did you earn the right, like, to have total autonomy over the roster? Exactly.
In terms of personnel.
Exactly. Again, he's a good coach. I am not quite – I would love – if I was hired, I would hire him, you know? But I am – what – the sense of I've earned the right to have full autonomy over the roster. Why? Tell me why. Oh, because I went to AFC Championship. Okay, why? Tell me again, why? I won the AFC South. Why? Why do you deserve? Because if I'm being honest with myself, the GM was in place already. John Robinson, whatever people want to say about John Robinson, he brought DeMarco Murray in here. He drafted Derrick Henry, even though now we know, hey, listen, he probably wasn't on board all the way with it, but he still drafted him.
Yeah.
Drafted. Did he?
Jeffrey Simmons.
Jeffrey Simmons, Kevin Byard. A.J. Brown. Guys that were cornerstones for this organization. And as those guys started to get either hurt or they started to get a little bit long in the tooth as far as their career, this team started to decline. You had an opportunity to get this team back on top or back in contention for the AFC South, and you couldn't do it. we can give you the excuses, and they would be 100% right, but you didn't do it. If you believe you you should have total autonomy over the roster, then this roster should have been better.
We'll get right into your phones on this coming up next. Your reaction to Joe and Diana Russini's breakdown in The Athletic, what went on behind the scenes between Amy Adams Strunk and Mike Vrabel. Right into your phones, 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores will be on the road taking on Kentucky. Pregame begins at 5:45 and tip-off is at 6 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. If you have not read it, I highly recommend that you do read Joe Rexroad and Diana Russini's breakdown in The Athletic, providing a little bit of context as to what went on, not a little bit, providing a lot of context as to what went on behind the scenes between Mike Vrabel and Amy Adams Strunk. Some of my biggest takeaways: that Vrabel was never told that Ryan Cowden was going to be the next general manager, but he wanted him. That Ryan Cowden supposedly, reportedly, ran the draft board this past draft. That one thing that rubbed Amy Adams Strunk the wrong way was Vrabel's visit to New England in his speech when he said, "It's not like this everywhere. Enjoy it." When I said, "Whoa, whoa, 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 what the heck does that mean?" That rubbed Amy Adams Strunk the wrong way. That Vrabel wanted full control, proposed to Amy Adams Strunk that Rand should be the assistant general manager, didn't feel like Rand was qualified to be the general manager. That's really kind of what set everything in motion of this, of the relationship between Amy Adams Strunk and Mike Vrabel. Another thing that really rubbed Amy Adams Strunk the wrong way is with all of these reports that came out from Ben Volen in the Boston Globe and Greg Bedard of BostonSports.com about Vrabel potentially being slated to be the next head coach in New England. It rubbed Amy the wrong way that Mike Vrabel never addressed these things and never denied those reports.
You know what? When that story came out, and, you know, kudos to Jared for pushing sort of the envelope, pushing it, trying to get an answer. But obviously we didn't get an answer. I didn't want to believe that Vrabel would be that cavalier to go up there and just spew, like, and when he's talking, he's thinking Tennessee Titans. You see what I'm saying? It's like, are you that arrogant to go up to your former team that is enshrining you into their Hall of Fame? You've won Super Bowls there. Are you that arrogant to go up there and be talking about your employer?
You want my honest answer? Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't want to believe he was that, he would be that cavalier and that arrogant to do that. Mm-hmm. But obviously, Miss Amy was like, no, you are that. I don't want to believe it, but it's starting to come true that, yeah, you are that way. And that's not what I want in my organization. And she has every right to change her mind. She loved Mike Vrabel, and she wanted him to be the long-term coach. But when those things started happening, and you didn't address them properly, mm-hmm. it's not up to Rand Carthon to address them. It's up to you to talk with the – you said it, so you tell your owner, explain to your owner what you meant. It's not up to me to come to you and be like, what did you – no, you went out there and you said, explain to me what you meant by that, because there's a lot of things going on and I don't like it that's coming out. So explain to me what you meant. And I don't think he ever gave her that explanation.
No, because I think it was pretty damning on him that,
exactly.
Hey, look, it's not like this everywhere. Because I want to be here. I don't want to be there.
But again, I didn't want to believe that he was that arrogant and cavalier that he would go to New England and start, you know, spilling the tea, as the young folks say, start spilling the tea about an organization that he's employed by.
Yeah.
And they love him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, was that when the Think Like a Man was born? Uh-huh. When Jared asked Mike Vrabel about his comments in New England?
If you think like a man. You don't think like me.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, think like me. Yeah, think like
it
a man.
It could have been. But kudos to him for pushing it.
The audacity for Mike Vrabel to get up in a press conference uh-huh. and say that when he's called on his bullcrap.
That's the sort of the... I said it, but I don't want to address it type of thing.
Yeah, right.
I know what I meant,
I'm not going to tell y'all what I meant. For it.
You know?
Yeah. Let's get into your thoughts on this. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe is on the line with a thought on Mike Vrabel to the Patriots. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for taking the call. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest. as a Patriots fan, we just had the greatest coach in NFL history, and he's a defensive guy. Yeah. The last thing I want as a head coach is another defensive guy. If you look atop of the NFL perch right now, whether it's Andy Reid, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, who's quietly back in the playoffs, they get rid of Aaron Rodgers. Prior to that, he had 3 13-win seasons. A lot of the success in the NFL is with offensive-minded coaches. And let's be honest. You can never give any head coach GM control. Belichick had control, greatest coach of all time, and our last 15 drafts have been garbage. We've had 2 All-Pros in the last 15 years, and one of them is Gunnar Olszewski. So, you know, you got to go more toward an offensive way. I believe Vrabel being let go, I think it was mutual. I mean, he's going to get paid. He's going to find another place to go. He's going to land on his feet. And Miss Amy did the absolute right thing. You cannot let him have control of the GM position. We knew that he was not set up for success when he didn't have the GM that hired him. You have to have that. I mean, look at John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan and look at their last 6-7 drafts. You have to have the GM and the head coach have to be hired together.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, once they let A.J. Brown go, that was a death sentence for Vrabel's coaching career. Yeah.
Yeah, Joe.
The last thing I wanted to touch on was the going for two and the analytics. And, D-Mace, you'll appreciate this story. Tony Dungy told this story because prior to Tony Dungy getting hired in 1996 in Tampa, he was Dennis Green's defensive coordinator. And arguably, Tony Dungy is one of the most brilliant defensive minds of all time, architect of the cover two. And, I mean, the guy almost made it to a Super Bowl with Sean King as a quarterback. Plus, he's a man of such high moral regard and what he does for young people at risk. But it was with the Minnesota Vikings, they were behind by 1 point. You know, the clock had run out, so it was either kick one and go into overtime or go for two. And Dungy, the most conservative coach you would have ever met in your life, you know that, he pulls Dennis Green aside, and he goes, Dennis, if I told you before the game, all the preparation, all the work, all the offensive weapons we have on this team, if I told you that all we have to do is get 2.5 yards in one play and we're going to win the game, would you take that chance? And Dennis is like, oh, I would absolutely take that chance. You know, and this is Dungy talking him into it. And Dennis says to Dungy, should I do it? And Dungy's like, no, no way, you can't do it. And the reason being is that I always agree with the going for two, especially if you're on the road, just for that reason, in one play, 2.5 yards, you're going to win the whole game. It's totally worth it. But you have to be ready to get absolutely killed if you don't get it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know,
appreciate your call, Joe. And it's a good point. When you make a risk like that, you got to be willing to deal with the consequences. Joe, I appreciate your phone call. To his first point about Mike Vrabel to New England, I get it. If Patriots don't want Mike Vrabel, because you would basically be getting Bill Belichick 2.0.
Exactly.
In football philosophy, and really, for the most part, in personality as well. Maybe the Patriots want that because
didn't Kraft, it's come out that Kraft, he wants his organization back. Like, he wants his it's been for so long, it's been Bill Belichick's organization. When you think of the New England Patriots, you think of two people. The third year, Robert Kraft, but after, you think of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. He wanted his organization back, and I think mutually they probably agreed. It's best to part ways under, you know, a bad season, but the relationship is still there.
I have not seen that he wanted his organization back. That could have just been me totally, you know, missing something there. But to the point about, you know, offensive head coach, that's the way that the league is going. I agree that you look at all of the offensive gurus around the league, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, he mentions Matt LaFleur. I say that very hesitantly.
Well, Matt, you got to give it to him. This season, he's earned his stripes this season with what has happened. And
they made the playoffs.
Yes.
They made the playoffs. But he's getting that back there. You see offensive-minded head coaches having more success in this league than not. Nick Saban has announced his retirement. Joining us coming up next to break all of that down, what comes next, the domino effects in college football. Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.